Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is going to be an empowerment hour. Today, we're going to be talking about new research. It could damage human genetics permanently. I'll share that with you. Also, the truth behind all those millions they're spending in California. And the pesticide industry is the people backing the GMO Say No group in California. We're there to say yes. And we'll give you the latest on that as well. So I'm on the road until right up towards the election, doing all that we possibly can, educating. Today, a brand new 15-minute documentary goes out on the impact of the environment with GMOs. I film this all over the world, and it's given to every grassroots group in California. We're doing it the old-fashioned way. We're calling people, going to small meetings, because the mainstream media in California has shut us out, all of us. But that doesn't mean that we don't have the ability to get our message out. So for all of our listeners on KPFK, please send out the information to your friends. Ask them to download the films that you have received. You have five parts now. Each one tells you a story, has a beginning, middle, and end of why you should be opposed to GMO foods for all the right reasons, and why they should vote yes on Proposition 37. We want to have our GMO foods labeled so we can choose through freedom of choice to say yes or no. So that is where my energies are placed at this moment. And I'm one of those people who believe that all shoulders against the breach. You know, no one should run for cover. No one should hide. No one should. When you've got an enemy, this demonic, this evil, this bad to the bone, then you must go and confront them. You must stand. One David against one Goliath, Goliath always wins. 10 million Davids, Goliath loses. We're calling upon everyone in California to join us. Just regular people. But we have scientists. We have environmentalists. We have experts. We have the truth on our side. We have whistleblower scientists. We have all the dirty workings of every one of these GMO industries. But we're not given a chance to debate. For many years, there was only one voice that was allowed to be heard on the subject of AIDS, the official voice. And that was broken down between those scientists who had a financial stake in the outcome. They generally own patents, whether it was for the HIV antibody test, which is a complete fraud. Nobody should ever take that. And in fact, I have to take it every year because of my insurance policy, or I don't get my insurance from my company. But I take it with a long protest that I do in writing, submitting hundreds of articles of why the test is fraudulent. Now, of course, yes, I do take it or I wouldn't get my insurance. But I let them know what I think of them. I let them know what I think of the science behind it. It's all fraudulent. In any case, I don't believe anyone should be given the test. But you would never know there was a problem with the test. You would never know that you could have 70 different conditions, leprosy, measles, pregnancy, arthritis, and you could test positive for HIV. How's that possible? Because it wasn't a specific test to begin with. But the people who controlled that test controlled the media. They had very powerful positions. And then you had a division within the gay community. There were the gays who saw a chance to get on the inside of policymaking. And indeed, when you consider the terrible crimes committed against homosexuals, the homophobes, in positions of power and in the general public for decades, you certainly appreciated they had a chance to then be invited in to share in policy. But the trouble was, that was almost immediately controlled and co-opted by Burroughs Wellcome and other groups that gave money, lavish money, phenomenal amounts of money. Now it's into the hundreds of millions of dollars collectively, as long as you went along. don't question the drug therapy. Even when hundreds of thousands of people were getting sick and many dying because of the AZT. And we documented that by another group of gays who were looking for the truth and weren't going to be compromised. So it was an enormous battle that was never played out in the public. It was behind the scenes. And then there were those of us who were the independent journalists and the scientists who began to look for the truth and found that the truth was not on the side of the orthodoxy. So what did we do? We joined a group and we asked 1,600 scientists and journalists and physicians, outstanding reputations, including Nobel Prize winners in science in AIDS research, Dr. Curry Mullis. You can see his interview with me where he just destroys everything about AIDS up on my website. Now, you think that you have the truth on your side? Debate him. All right? I invited ACT UP. Come on the show and debate me. You're good at bad-mouthing people and using your interstation politics. Come on and just see where the truth is. Let the public decide who has the facts on their side. They wouldn't do it. Peter Duisberg and all these people, nobody will debate them because you just get creamed. Anyone who debates any of the AIDS activists who are the scientists saying everything we've done on AIDS is wrong, they're not denying AIDS. They're not denying AIDS diseases. They're denying all the science of how it's to be diagnosed and treated. So there's no AIDS denial. It's just they're challenging how we go about defining what is AIDS and how we treat a person. We frequently treat them to death. When was the last time you saw a debate? When was the last time you saw Professor Gilbert of Harvard, Nobel Prize winner, who's gone public saying that all the science on AIDS is nonsense? You won't, because these people do their homework, their reputations. They put their reputations out there. Now, look at the same thing on GMOs. I just use that as an example. But they've been successful for 26 years of keeping any honest debate and honest facts from coming forward. And look at the other side, GMOs. They've controlled the media. They control the advertising. Remember, you're not dealing with just one company. You're dealing with some of the largest purchasers of advertising in the media in the United States. They have multiple divisions, not just pesticides. They have pharmaceutical divisions. So the drugs for antidepression and let's say sleep, same company. So are you going to be the one that allows your journalist to write an honest article about the fraud of GMOs, the danger of GMOs, the human experimentation of GMOs? The fact is, Professor Bruce Lipton says that once you take a gene from a bacteria or virus and you insert that, or you insert the virus or the bacteria into, let's say, a human, you cannot control the outcome. You're going to allow that journalist to tell the truth if one-third of your entire revenue is going to be yanked? No. Self-censorship is rampant. So we're trying to get Jeffrey Smith, Vandana Shiva, myself, and others who are knowledgeable and have the scientific and working background on GMOs to debate. And we encourage people who believe GMOs are safe and effective and what will save the world. Good. You'll be treated with dignity and respect. But come and debate us. I'm offering you a challenge. I'm asking the people on WPFW, our sister station that you're now listening to in Washington, D.C., and BAI in New York, and KPFK in Los Angeles, all the other stations all over the United States, and South Beach, and West Virginia, and around the world, you have an open invitation to come on this program and debate me, personally. You'll be given equal time, and you will be treated with respect. If you have the truth on your side, then you'll make me look bad, and you'll have an audience that supports you. But if you don't have the truth, if all you have is propaganda and money in your pocket, stuffed there by the GMO industries, if you're a scientist for hire, all that's going to be exposed because we do our research, we do our due diligence, we do discovery, and Wikipedia is not a source that we consider reputable at all. You use it. We don't. So that said, so they won't come out and debate. Fine. So we have to take our message directly to the public. So I will get into that in greater depth. A commentary today from myself that I've written and Evelyn Pringle and Martha Rosenberg from Alternet. As many of you know, I've written articles, I've done clinical studies, and I did an award-winning documentary on children. It was called The Drugging of Our Children. Today, the commentary is how our kids are getting hooked on pills for life. And now they're making it possible for you to have your child diagnosed a few months old. If your child cries, and then doesn't, and then laughs, and then cries, your child has a brain chemical imbalance and must be immediately diagnosed and put on medication for life. Of course, for the child's benefit only. Really? Well, let's see how we can deconstruct that. As you see, we have a lot to share. Let us begin. First, let's take a look at the brain. Now, I'm doing a major research project on brain chemistry and how to help enhance it, repair damage to the neurons, take out amyloid plaque that causes senility and dementia and other diseases. And I'll give you the results of that in about 6 months. New research from a meeting published in Neuroscience, of the Society of Neuroscience, which is the world's largest source of information regarding neurology and well-being. Here's what they're saying, and let me quote from their report. It says, quote, while using imaging technology to investigate how neurology contributes to dietary disorders, scientists were able to associate the foods people eat to how and what they think. All of the experts in each study had a common goal, to identify a new approach to treat diet-related disorders. And then what they did, they took a look at cognitive function, and if people skipped breakfast, what parts of the brain were engaged that could be measured when you were seeking pleasure, and how you turn that off or turn it on with different foods or caloric intake. And what they found is the moment you skip a meal, you eat more at the next meal. And so therefore, by fasting for part of the day, you actually are gorging another part. That's bad. And that adversely affects the brain. They also believe, now mind you, these are orthodox people, but they found that there was a big benefit by taking three omega-3 supplement a day. And what we have found is by eating those foods that are calming, which are alkalizing foods, the grains, and some of your best grains would be millet and amaranth and quinoa. And those are rarely eaten in the United States. They're inexpensive. They're very tasty and very easy to prepare. And also, so some of the most important ideas is to sustain the energy of the blood sugar. And that would be to use things such as avocados and nut butters or nuts, walnuts, pine nuts, pistachios, macadamia nut butter, very good for you. So healthy, quality fats and healthy grains, and we're not even talking about supplements. Now, why are so many kids in the United States suffering from vitamin D deficiency? When I was growing up, we didn't have rickets. We didn't have demineralization in children because we were outside playing all the time. Today, kids are not getting out to play. They're micro-controlled. Their environments are controlled. As a result, they're not getting enough vitamin D. Quote from this study from the United States Bone and Joint Initiative. Vitamin D is essential to our body's ability to absorb calcium from our diet to build strong bones, which are the building blocks of a healthy body, and to make muscles move, said the doctors at the Shriners Hospital for Children in Portland, Oregon. So why don't you do something simple? Why don't you just let kids stay outside and play more? That's how you deal with this. Otherwise, you got to give the children some vitamin D and supplement anywhere from 400 to 2,000 units a day. Now, a lot of people have anxiety, and understandably so, based upon the world we live in today, but we want to try to neutralize the negative effects of that. Here's something that has just come out in the scientific literature, and it says the following. Probiotics can help reduce anxiety. Now, normally, this audience would think that, all right, probiotics are digestive supplements, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of scientific papers in peer-reviewed journal showing how they help your gut, and by that, help your overall immune system. But this is a double-blind, placebo-controlled study that showed that Lactobacillus and Bifidus bacterium actually alleviate symptoms of anxiety. French researchers also found those treated had lower levels of cortisol. Now, you know that cortisol is the hormone which elevates due to stress. So this research is actually very interesting, and it's beginning to paint a very clear picture of how our gut can influence our minds and emotions. This also explains why stressful situations cause those butterflies in our stomach and wreak havoc on our digestive system. But just how it is that probiotics influence our mood, the science isn't 100% clear, but what happens is this, and I'll kind of give you a language understanding of it. Probiotics boost neurotransmitters and lower inflammation. Now, that's why, for as long as I've been in health, I've heard the term second brain applied to the gut. Why? Because it contains a vast network of neurons. Yes, that's correct. In fact, over 100 million neurons, which is more than what's found in your spinal cord. Just like the neurons in your brain, the neurons in your gut communicate with neurotransmitters. And one particular nerve, called the vagus nerve, communicates directly to your brain. And this is why your digestive system responds to stress and outside stimuli. And so what they found in this experiment was that probiotics increase the number of GABA receptors, gamma-aminobutyric acid, in the brain and the production of GABA, which is a neurotransmitter which supports rest and relaxation. The anti-anxiety class of meds, which I absolutely am opposed, work by modulating GABA, but synthetically. So the probiotics turn down inflammation in your intestine. So what happened was the scientists postulate that behind its mood-enhancing effects, inflammation is tied to mental health. So therefore, the more anxious you are, the more inflammation you have in your body, in all your body. And that's why when people get anxious and they get angry and irritable or depressed, they end up with sore throats and infections, pneumonia. Because inflammation directly impacts immunity. Chronic inflammation absolutely devastates immunity. And that's why when you start thinking of something and you have kind of a bad feeling, a bad sense of things, sense of foreboding, where do you feel it? You feel it in your gut. How many times have you said, I had this feeling? Where was the feeling? In your little finger? In your right toe? No, it's always the same. I had this gut feeling. Haven't you heard that? Gut feeling. Everyone in the world throughout time immemorial have had the same gut feeling. That's because there's a second brain of sorts in the gut, and you have 100 million neurons in the gut, and these neurons communicate with neurotransmitters, including the vagus nerve, and that's why you get that upset stomach, and that's why you get that nervous stomach, and that's why people say, I can't eat right now, I got a nervous stomach, I got an upset stomach. That's what they're really referring to. So the probiotics come in there, and what do the probiotics do? They're good bacteria. And what do the good bacteria do? They turn down inflammation, and then they create more good bacteria. So when you're having, 4 to 20 billion good bacteria per serving, that's about a teaspoon, you're colonizing good healthy bacteria in your gut. That means you're turning off inflammation. That means that you're able to help the dying bad bacteria get out of the body, and hence you're going to not feel anxious. You'll feel more calm. So that's something new and exciting and good information, and always from peer-reviewed literature, the British Journal of Nutrition. So wanted to share that with you. And one final one before we go to our guest who is standing by. There is really good evidence now that was published in Current Hypertension Reviews that meditation, including transcendental meditation, should really be a part of our overall health curriculum in schools. And it should be in all of our public health programs, because more people still die today in the United States from cardiovascular disease and stroke than cancer. And though it's not the number one killer or the number two stroke silent killer, medicine itself, iatrogenesis, is the number one killer. Modern medicine is looking for ways to help slow this down and reverse it. And one more piece of the puzzle, and I must add it's merely a piece of the puzzle, is the ability to be in control of our stress, which lowers our cortisol, lowers inflammation, and meditation does that. And meditation then reduces your high blood pressure, it helps lower your pulse rate, it helps your heart, so it helps you live a longer life. The article that I read, Prevention and Treatment of Cardiovascular Disease in Adolescents and Adults Through Transcendental Meditation, published in Current Hypertension Reviews, Volume 8, Number 3. So now you know you should be doing some meditation, and that would help you. I'm Gary Knoll. And by the way, for the people who believe that, I don't want to be bothered with breastfeeding, formula feeding is fine. No, it isn't. It is not. The latest from Science Daily, done before the annual AACR International Conference on Frontiers in Cancer Prevention Research, done at the National Child Study in Houston and in Austin. Quote, prolonged formula feeding and delay in solid foods was associated with an increased risk of pediatric acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So, want to increase the risk of your developing baby having leukemia? Keep him on formula and don't let him have that solid food. Quote, for every month that a child was fed formula, taking into account other feeding practices, we found that the risk for this type of cancer, which is a pediatric acute lymphoblastic leukemia, was higher, end quote, University of Texas at Austin, and presented to a group of epidemiological experts at this national conference. So, you can't compete with breast milk. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us.
Far too many of you die. You know we can find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Nice to have you with us, everyone, and a special call out to all of our wonderful listeners down in Washington, D.C., Baltimore, West Virginia, Virginia area. I'll be down there in about 3 weeks to do a all-day and most evening lecture, film showing. Look forward to being in once again for the first time in about 3 years in Washington. I've been there much more than that, but for our WPFW audience. Before we go to our guest, who I've given you his background in bio, Gar Smith, who's out in Berkeley, California right now, and we're going to talk about our national nuclear roulette. First, let me just say hello, Gar. Nice to have you with us today.
Good morning, Gary. Thank you very much. I've been dealing with the stress of preparing for a radio interview, and I was listening to you recommend meditation, and I got to say, just the sound of your voice in the morning is very, very soothing.
Thank you. I'm going to lead into our discussion, which we will have plenty of time to take, by talking about some topics directly related to your interest and the specifics at hand. And once I go into all these, then feel free to address the larger issues that I'll be opening up to our audience. All right?
Okay.
Because I know you're also very interested in supporting Proposition 37, yes, label our genetically engineered food, correct?
That is very true, yes.
Good. Well, I'm going to deal with a little bit of that because we're also out there doing all we can right up to election time because we don't have 10 cents, let alone $2 million a day to spend. So I want to get our KPFK audience involved in this. First up, when it comes to the latest, and this is brand new information from Heidi Stevens from greenmedinfo.com, a great source. Let me quote this. GM wheat may damage human genetics permanently. The Australian government, in the form of its science research arm, is joining agribusiness profiteering by designing a GM wheat that could kill people who eat it and be inherited by their children. I'll quote this. It says, "We have not yet seen the worst damage that genetic engineering may do. Australia's government agency, Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, is developing a wheat species that is engineered to turn off genes permanently. Professor Jack Heineman of the University of Canterbury Center for Integrated Research and Biosafety has studied the wheat's potential. Digital Journal, the peer-reviewed journal, he says that we found that the molecules created in this wheat intended to silence wheat genes can match human genes. And through ingestion, these molecules can enter human beings and potentially silence our genes. The findings are absolutely assured. There is no doubt that these matches exist," end quote. And the implications are clarified by Professor Judy Carman of Flinders University. If this silences the same gene in us that it silences in the wheat, well, children who are born with this enzyme not working tend to die by the age of 5. Silencing the equivalent gene in humans is that is silenced in this genetically modified wheat holds the potential of killing people, but it gets worse. Silenced genes are permanently silenced and can be passed down the generations. So, needless to say, there's a major effort now to fight this, but at least this is out in the open. We don't need any genetically engineered wheat, and there's no human studies at all, and there's no long-term studies. Also, we now know from Jack Caldever from Common Dreams, quote, the $36 million campaign in California, with six of the world's largest pesticide companies, has been caught in yet another lie, this time possibly criminal. These companies and their allies in the junk food industry know that their profit margins may suffer if consumers have a choice whether to purchase genetically engineered foods or not. And that's why opponents are spending nearly $1 million per day trying to make Proposition 37 complicated. But really, it's simple. We have the right to know what's in our food. To date, the No on 37 campaign, which is their side, ours is yes, has been able to repeat one lie after another with near impunity. But has this pattern of deceit finally caught up with it? Yesterday, the Yes on 37 campaign sent letters to the U.S. Department of Justice requesting a criminal investigation of the No on 37 campaign for possible fraudulent misuse of the official seal of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The No on 37 campaign affixed the FDA seal to one of the campaign mailers. Section 506 of the U.S. Criminal Code states, quote, whoever knowingly uses, affixes, or impresses such fraudulently made, forged, or counterfeited, mutated, or altered seal or facsimile thereof to or upon any certificate, instrument, commission, document, or paper of any description shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 5 years or both, end quote. The letter also provides evidence that the no on 37 campaign falsely attributed to a direct quote to the FDA in the campaign mailer. So everything that we're doing is showing that they're absolutely wrong on all their counts. Now, that's on genetic engineering. Now we'll go to what we specifically are going to talk about, and that is our nuclear legacy. Here's the latest. Quote, TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, has finally acknowledged, for the first time, that the nuclear disaster at Fukushima No. 1 power plant could have been avoided. In a statement, TEPCO's Internal Reform Task Force said the utility was aware safety improvements were necessary long before last year's quake and tsunami caused three catastrophic core meltdowns at the facility, but failed to act because it feared the political, economic, and legal consequences of implementing new measures. Quote, looking back on the accident, the problem was that preparations were not made in advance. And that's the head of TEPCO, the president, Haros, in a statement. Quote, could necessary measures have been taken with previous tsunami evaluations? It was possible to take action. So now they're acknowledging that they didn't take action. Now, here's where we begin with you. We have a Nuclear Regulatory Commission, very similar in their all pro, nuclear's great, clean, cheap, give subsidies, federal agency, the Nuclear Regulatory Agency. We are told the following, that our nuclear power plants don't outgas or emit any radiation, that if sometime a little bit gets out, it's always safe because it's low-level radiation, and we all know that low-level radiation is perfectly harmless, that there's not a problem if there is a solar storm. We can handle that. If there's an earthquake, we can handle that also. And we feel that even if some of these plants are 55 or 60 years old, they should be given another 30, 40-year extension on their current premises without any major improvements because they're safe. Could you take us through each of these primary arguments? And finally, the argument that Obama and others have made on both the right, corporate right and corporate left, that nuclear is clean, renewable, and green, and hence should be supported and subsidized as it has been to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. The forum is yours. Take your time, Gar.
I should have made a list. That's quite a helping of topics to tackle. One thing that we do know now, speaking of TEPCO, is that in the buildup to the first explosion, the Japanese equivalent of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission actually responded to TEPCO's concerns about a potential explosion by telling them, do not take this information to the public. It would only cause unnecessary alarm. 2 hours later, the first of the reactors exploded. This cult of nuclear safety, this myth of nuclear safety, exists not only in Japan, but also obviously in the United States. Whenever there is an incident at a reactor, we always hear the same reassurance. There's no immediate harm. And the key word, the key adjective there, of course, is immediate. The harm is ever present. Reactors are constantly outgassing tritium and other radioisotopes. The more they age, the more the reactor's pipes, plumbing, valves, and tubes began to wear, and the more leakage you get of radioisotopes into not only the air but into discharge water, which under U.S. law can be permissibly dumped into waterways. But of course, because radioactivity is addressed as permissible under nuclear regulatory law, that does not mean that it is harmless under the laws of nature.
All right. please continue on to the next issue. If you were to be debating the president, tell us all the reasons why we should deconstruct our entire 104 nuclear facilities in the United States.
We are faced with a number of both known and previously unacknowledged hazards. The technology itself is extremely dated. We tend to think of nuclear power as being a shining state-of-the-art technology, but the first reactors were designed back in the day when engineers used pencils and slide rules. The reactors, many of them in the United States today, still have analog needles instead of digital readouts to inform the operators about the nature and conduct of the operation. The reactors, in addition to being old, and this prospect of being relicensed for additional years, it's just a way of kicking the nuclear canister down the road. Decommissioning the nuclear power plant is a very costly enterprise. There's nothing but money going out. There's no money coming in. So naturally, human nature, corporate nature, is going to inform people that the better option is to extend the life of these reactors to delay the resolution of the problems that in many ways are unsolvable. We still haven't found a solution for the radioactive waste that these reactors produce. Tons per year from every reactor, and they just pile up around the country at the reactor sites. Fortunately, the NRC has recently, under pressure from judicial prompting, decided that they are going to cease licensing any new reactors for construction until there is a solution, a proven solution to the problem of safe waste storage, which essentially should be drawing the curtain on nuclear energy in the United States. The nuclear proponents tried to encourage some new support for their program by claiming that it would be a solution to global warming. But in raw math, it's just imponderable. It would require the construction of about 1,400 nuclear reactors to cut global warming CO2 gases just in half, building something like 32 nuclear reactors a year. And clearly, when it takes many years to merely apply and license a plant and construct a plant, from concept to flipping the switch could be a matter of 17 to 20 years for each of these new reactors. Obviously, the math just does not add up. It's not a real-world solution.
All right. What do you think, as an aside, but it's not an aside because of all the coal that's actually used at one stage, but what do you think of President Obama promoting once again the discredited concept of clean coal as a major source of energy for the future?
Well, there are many ways and many occasions in which many of us who voted for President Obama regret that he has compromised again and again with the established forces of commerce, and this is another case, looking for techno-cures to a problem that is basically a problem from the past. Head of the German Green Party recently characterized nuclear power as the Betamax of the energy industry, and coal also is another one of these old 19th century energy sources, these fossil resources that we ingloriously are forced to get down on our knees and dig out of the ground and extract and chemically refine and process and haul and distribute and then burn, which produces soot, radioactivity, solid waste, chemical outgassing that despoils the land, the water, the air. All of these old technologies are really not worthy of a thinking species. It's time that we evolved into using the the powers that nature provided and has used to keep this planet alive and thriving for millennia, it comes down freely from above. We don't have to get down on our knees and dig in the dirt like savages anymore.
A couple short answers. I'm going to throw a lot of questions at you rather quickly, all right?
Sure.
Is there any such thing as safe levels of radiation?
No, I had the good fortune to know and work with Dr. John Goffman, who's one of the co-discoverers of plutonium here in San Francisco. And Dr. Goffman, after being kicked out of his research assignment at UC Berkeley because he became a critic of nuclear energy, very persuasively made the point again and again that there is no safe level of radioactivity exposure.
Good. The concept from the pro-nuclear industry that all of our 104 nuclear active nuclear facilities, none of them regularly emit radiation. True or false?
That's patently false. They release tritium. It's been a big problem at some of the reactors that try and get relicensed back east, Indian Point Reactor. The government also allows radioactive releases into water discharges. And it's just unconscionable for these organizations to make a claim like that. They certainly know the limits of their technology, and as their machinery ages, the problem continues to get provably worse.
All right. True or not, that around all of these major nuclear facilities, especially in densely populated areas, you also see a spike in breast cancer or thyroid cancer rates?
Yeah, we've seen increases in childhood leukemia. There's a study in Germany that came out recently that added to the corroborative information that this is a matter of concern in Fukushima, the children in that were exposed to the fallout patterns from those reactor accidents are experiencing, as a matter of fact, very soon after the exposure, were beginning to experience lumps in their thyroids. And the thyroid exposure is very key because there are very few ways of exposure that can lead to a thyroid eruption aside from exposure to radioactive iodine isotopes. So that seems to be one of the clearest links.
On Monday evening, the most popular show I do out of almost 20 hours of broadcasting a week is called the Progressive Commentary Hour. It's at 7 p.m. over the Internet. And we take a very serious topic every week and invite the world's leading progressive minds on that topic to discuss. This Monday evening is going to be our deadly nuclear legacy. And one of the panelists, just one, is Dr. Jeanette Sherman. You're familiar with her work.
Yes, I am.
What do you think of her stating that we have had thousands of deaths in the United States on the West Coast in that area because of the Fukushima fallout? Would you agree or challenge her assumptions and her math and her statistics in her article?
Well, I'm very interested in the reporting that they've been putting out. I did have a problem with one of their first studies, which pointed to an increase in childhood mortality on the Pacific West Coast following the fallout sweep from Fukushima. Someone has pointed out that if you look at a broader span of time, that the spike that they saw and reported on was actually lower than the months that had preceded it, so that although it looked as though there was a temporary spike, within a larger span of time, the figures didn't necessarily indicate that it was a major increase in mortality. The fact, however, still was that they did find this spike following the cloud that passed over the western states. So the research is very interesting, and I'm glad they're doing it. They're using information that anybody could use, but apparently the federal government does not have the time or interest to put its own scientists to work looking at census data and mortalities.
My final two questions for you. knowing now from a report this week that the one remaining building there that has the spent fuel rods that was damaged, and they have not even been able to get a robot in there, it's so radioactive, it's sunk 3 feet. And the statement was that there's a very high probability that the building is going to collapse. A, if it does collapse, what is the likely outcome as compared to, let's say, Chernobyl, where we know over 950,000 people have died because of Chernobyl, though the Russians tried to hide that. It was later revealed in over 5,000 articles published in scientific journals in Slavic, which Americans don't read. B, what does it say about common sense and reason with the Japanese government suggests that people, as long as they're 10 miles away, are okay, and 20 miles away, they have nothing to worry about, when I'm not aware of any law of physics that tells the radiation in the wind or the rain to stop at a 10-mile barrier. And that means that we're going to see radioactive hotspots all over Japan and in the ocean and in seaweed and fish. And in the, but they've got all these tens of millions of people in Japan. They can't put them anywhere right now. So to me, I would be concerned if I was in Japan that the government's being honest about the continuous exposure 24/7. It's out of our mind and out of our news cycle, but that radiation is coming at them every single second of the day. So you have to look at long-term cumulative effects. So the final question is, what is the probability of people living in Tokyo, which is not that far away from Fukushima, in approximately 10 hours, the wind from Fukushima will hit the entire Tokyo area with 40 million people. What's the long-term outcome if this is not dealt with?
This is very troubling, of course, the Unit 4 reactor. The construction of these General Electric model reactors placed the spent fuel storage systems on the rooftops, which makes them very much out of reach. And the damaged building, if it were to topple, it currently contains, I believe the figure is 1,535 used nuclear fuel rods on the roof. And if this 460 tons of spent fuel were to topple, there's a very good chance that it would land on top of an existing common pool that contains even more of these nuclear fuel rods. The combined radioactivity in these units is roughly 85 times the amount of cesium-137 released at Chernobyl. And a number of people have warned that if these spent fuel systems were to lose their cooling and collide and begin to ignite, it could, quote, destroy the world environment and our civilization. So it couldn't be a greater matter of concern. There's currently construction underway in a very ponderous and costly and never been done before manner to reinstall a containment system around that damaged building and install a huge crane to one by one remove these very heavy and dangerously radioactive fuel elements, keeping them underwater at all times and removing them to a safe location on land. This is going to take months, if not years, very laborious process. And in that time, we could have other accidents, we could have other earthquakes. Japan is a very seismically active area. They never should have thought about building any kind of nuclear reactor in a site like Japan.
And, of course, we have Hillary Clinton, our Secretary of State, advocating that they continue their pro-nuclear policy because it would adversely affect the America's perception of the safety and usefulness of nuclear if Japan, the third largest economy in the world, went anti-nuclear and went off the grid. Well, you've given us a lot to think about. Of course, you would think that something that could virtually change all life on Earth would make someone pay attention in Washington or the National Security Agencies or at least come up for a dialogue. But the fact that they've hidden all this, to me, says they know exactly how dangerous it is and that they're terrified that an earthquake of a magnitude of 7.5 or more, I've been told, will cause that building or could cause that building to collapse, which could cause this. So we have no way of knowing. Will they get a mountain time? Will an earthquake down this? Will it fall from some other reason? How bad will this be? But when you have an earth changer that could impact all the people on Earth and our environment forever, this should be the number one priority in the world. And yet it's not. It's not even on anyone's consciousness in our political spectrum. So thank you for keeping it up there and out there, Gar Smith, and all the best for all the work that you do for all of us.
And I send the same wishes to you. Thank you very much for all of the good information that you're getting out that people don't have access to almost anywhere else in this media.
Nuclear Roulette, the truth about the most dangerous energy on Earth, from my guest, Gar Smith, who is editor emeritus of the prestigious environmental publication Earth Island Journal. I'm Gary Knoll. We're coming up near the end of our regular broadcast. For those who are listening over the internet, we'll continue. For those who are by a telephone and you would like to listen over the telephone, I'll give you a number you can listen to. Now we're going to that segment of our program called Talk Back. And we do a 1 hour every week, Sunday evening, 8 to 9 p.m. over the internet at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, where it's just about health and nutrition. And that's our second most popular show of the week. The first is on our Monday night 7 p.m. show. That is the most downloaded show in radio. Our number to call is 832-280-0066, 832-280-0066 to continue listening. And we will start lining up your calls for the remaining 6 minutes. I want to thank everyone who's been listening and to the nearly 5,000 brand new listeners every day, the nearly 40,000 who listen over the telephone. That's really, and those numbers are growing, and the 1,400,000 new listeners in the last 12 months, younger people. And we ask them, why are you listening? Mainly because of social issues and the dynamics of the investigative reporting and environmental issues. So we thank you, plus all of our regular people who listen because of health and nutrition. Now we're going to go to our phone calls. And our first phone call until the others come in is Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have a very nice email here from a woman. Her name is Claudia. She says, I was a very sick woman diagnosed with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis 8 years ago. I lost 40 pounds, couldn't work, couldn't think. I had no quality of life. I was on a medical roller coaster on a wide range of dangerous drugs for over 5 years, and I developed serum illness, which makes you just blow up like a balloon, and they put me on heavy doses of prednisone and other drugs. She developed numbness in her hands and feet, and a dear friend of hers referred her to a program that you did, which was sometime, you did a lecture last year at some time, and she said, when I got to the office and opened the door, I nearly fainted. She saw a huge mountain of stairs, and she wasn't sure she could make it. But she says, it was the best climb I could have ever made in my life. That climb literally catapulted my healing journey, which started with Gary Knoll's protocols. And she's been on the protocol now for a year. She said, I follow your recommendations. I've achieved many milestones. I'm essentially healed of Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, and I'm delighted to report that I finally completed something that I've always wanted to do in my entire life, and that is to write a children's book. So she wants to thank you for that wonderful lecture that you did and being there for everybody and having your protocols available for people. So I thought that was a very nice email. It's nice to hear when people just will spontaneously respond like that after they've had phenomenal success with your protocols.
What's her name?
Her name is Claudia.
Claudia, okay, good. And we have time for one more. Luann?
Oh, I didn't have another one set up. I thought you were taking another call.
No,
I don't have any others right now.
No, they just told me that because I'm not in the studio, they can't feed the calls over the line. So I'll not be able to take any of the phone calls. All right, well, that does it for today's program. Now let's remember Sunday night, 8 p.m., Talk Back. And I do that no matter where I'm at in the world. And also, for those of you who would like free health counseling and to help you with emotional conditions and stress and depression, with weight problems and pain problems, as long as it's not something that's terminal, as long as it's not a serious life-threatening illness, these people will not be able to help you. I can help you with those, and I will when I get back to the city. These people will help you for free, but please do not call them if you have a life-threatening illness. Other conditions, yes, that they can help you with. Call 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. I have four people. In fact, we're interviewing to hire a fifth because we have so many people. We've helped, I'm going to guess, around 40,000 people thus far for free, and it's changed a lot of their lives for the better. So it's one way we can help people. Let's say hello to Eutrice Lead, who's on now, and we'll get a preview of what she has coming up in the next hour. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello. Hello, Gary. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
Well, today we will be talking affirmatively as we look at Fisher versus the University of Texas with the help of a critical race theorist, Professor Ian Haney-Lopez of the University of California Law School.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to listening. So you have
Thank
a
you.
Great program, and Eutrice Lead, who's on 5 days a week, Monday to Friday from 1 to 2, following mine, and is gaining a very large audience and a very low audience because she does good broadcasting. She does her homework, and she cares about her audience. Have a nice day, everyone. I got to go back in front of the camera, or behind the camera now, and film this leading immunologist about a topic that we're all interested in. I'll see you on Sunday evening at 7 p.m.